You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That's the Hall of Famer Chris Carter. That is Nick Wright. May I just pause for 1 second to wish my daughter Harper a very happy birthday. 5 years ago today, I was in labor.
Happy birthday, Harper. That's wonderful.
Yes, really excited. Have a great day, little one. I will see you soon. She's watching. She likes to say your names. She calls out the names when the show starts, and then she goes
off
to do something else. A lot of quarterback news to discuss this morning. We're going to dive into all of it. Is Teddy Bridgewater on the trade market? Lamar Jackson has come back down to earth, and after last night, it appears Andrew Luck still has a ways to go. That's where we begin this morning, and let's just say it is a darn good thing preseason doesn't count. Otherwise, we'd be singing a very different tune regarding Andrew Luck today. In his first home game in nearly 600 days, Luck wasn't so lucky. Had a hard time finding any sort of rhythm on offense, completed 6 of his 13 passes for only 50 yards, tough couple of sacks, and he did have a pick. He had that interception. Despite all of that, though, Luck still managed to be upbeat after the game.
I'm very, very encouraged, both one, by how I feel. I feel great, which makes me happy. But then, and two, the attitude of the guys and then going out and playing football. I told someone after the game, I was like, I'm sort of happy to have been sacked by, you know, Suggs and a legit, sack. I was like, oh, I landed on my right elbow. It's sort of reminiscent of how I injured my shoulder a couple years ago. And I didn't feel anything, didn't give it a second thought. So, I think that's actually a big deal for me, and being able to sort of lose that thought bubble, if you will, that thought cycle.
Andrew Luck might have been the only one encouraged when he got sacked by Suggs on that tough shoulder there. CeCe, where does Andrew Luck's comeback stand after two preseason games now?
Well, I was very encouraged because I know how tough the game is. I know how tough the league is. I know how tough it is to play quarterback. So if Andrew Luck hadn't been injured and he had played the way that he played last night or the previous week in preseason game number one, I wouldn't be concerned at all. There's so many things about football that you only get better as far as practicing. I thought it was good that he was able to go against a defense in Baltimore that's going to be pretty good. I think they're returning 11 starters on their defense. They did not, after the intel from the defensive coordinator, they didn't go into this game, Baltimore, as a regular preseason game. They were going to blitz a lot. They were going to play a number of different coverages compared to other. So this test for me, for Luck, I thought was a good one. There's a couple things. One, he mentioned the sack by T. Suggs, and it was good because he gave us insight in on a lot of athletes feel, but they don't tell us the truth. Hey, you're coming back from injury. Are you concerned? No, not at all. Don't think about it. No, Luck told us the truth. We all think about it, and it was nice that he was able to because it was a sack very, very similar to something he got hurt on before. And that's typically where you land on the elbow, the defender's holding your arm down, and then your shoulder sublex or comes up. So he felt very, very good after that. So getting through that, that's a huge hurdle for a returning athlete. I also saw in the red zone where he tried to force the ball in on third down. That you can't simulate because in practice, the coaches will blow the whistle and be like, oh, he's out of the pocket. We're not going to put him in arm's way. But in the game, he was able to simulate, hey, there's a linebacker right there. Let me try to thread this needle. And the guy was like, no, this is NFL game speed. Let me show you. So the ability to be able to go at full speed, which he did have a failure and throw an interception, I'm fine with that. But getting sacked by Suggs and falling exactly the same way he was hurt a couple years ago, I think is monumental. So I thought it was encouraging. This game is tough. It's tough to play quarterback in the NFL, so I still like what I see as far as him being at the podium, still being enthusiastic, still having that rare smile that we see from quarterbacks after the game.
Listen, the sack by Terrell Suggs on that play, I'm not going to hold that one against him because he also said we didn't play the clip, but that's a deep shot, slow developing play. It's 3rd and 7. You are going to need time for that play to work. He tried to roll out a little bit, and this is why, I mean, Terrell Suggs, as they said in the broadcast, he has 125 career sacks for a reason. The Colts also were without their starting left tackle. Mm-hmm. I think it was Jack Doyle tried to chip Terrell Suggs but did not do a great job of it. He comes around. The play, and everyone's focused on that and the interception. I agree with you also that what he said, it is encouraging. He can fall on his throwing shoulder that way and feel fine about it. But what was my biggest concern with Andrew Luck coming back? How much has he learned from being the most pressured quarterback over his first 3 years, being the most hit quarterback in the pocket over his first 3 years, about getting the ball out quickly? And his final play, and I think we were able to put a clock on it, the last play he took, I mean, league average is 2.7 seconds to get the ball out. I mean, he's at 4 by the time he's touched. Now, that's not a play people are focused on because he's not thrown to the ground. He's not injured on it. It's just he's in the grasp. But they pointed it out good from the other angle on the broadcast. He had his running back coming up open in the flat. You can kind of see it there. He had another option. That's the type of thing that Andrew Luck has to avoid. That's the play that was more concerning to me than the Terrell Suggs play, which is going to happen. He had ample opportunity to get rid of the football there and did not do it.
Is that rust, CC? Is that just getting the feel of the game back to you, or is that just a fundamental flaw?
I mean, we see guys play that way that have played without an injury. So we can make an excuse and say it's rust. It's part of playing the game. In that situation there that Nick talks about, too, it's 3rd down, a little bit longer. He's trying to, because everyone in football is like, get the ball out of your hand. Get the ball out of your hand. Get the ball out of your hand. But also, there's a certain play call that there might not be someone open. All right? There's offensive linemen that have to do their job. This blitz, they had a blitz right here. It was a zone dog where they brought 3 guys and they dropped 1 guy off of his left. So he was trying to make sure that he knew where he was going. And if he does throw to the running back, he's got to throw right over a 6'5 guy's head. So we just can't be too consumed with get the ball out of your hand, protect yourself, if there ain't nobody open, because other people have things to do. So we have to be careful in get the ball out of your hand and trying to run the offense. It's 3rd down. You have to hold the ball sometimes a little bit for guys to be able to get down the field. I think when he runs with the football out of the pocket is more of a true measure of has he learned his lesson from what's happened to him in the past.
Did you see anything, besides staying healthy, taking the sack by Suggs, did you see anything encouraging in the way he's throwing the ball and his velocity and anything in any other part of his game?
Chris can speak to the throwing motion better than I can, but you talked about going into the first preseason game that's something you were going to watch, that and then after the first preseason game you thought it was the same motion that we'd seen from Luck for at Stanford his first year up until the injury. It, to my eye, it looked similar as well.
You want to see more plays downfield? Did you want to see him open?
Listen,
see more plays down the field, they need to upgrade their personnel.
Well, that's what I was going to say to Andrew.
So, I mean, we're going to sit here and critique Andrew Luck to death. All this and this and this and this. He don't have great wide receivers.
And T.Y. Hilton didn't play yesterday. Right. And so that's part of it as well. But my other big takeaway from yesterday's game is I've been saying there's 2 divisions in the AFC that you can almost flip a four-headed coin to say who's going to win it. The AFC West, I still feel that way. The AFC South, I do not feel that way anymore. That is, to me, I've seen enough from Indianapolis to know even if Luck is peak Andrew Luck, that's a 3-team race. This is a team that has a lack of talent on defense, has once again a lack of talent at running back. T.Y. Hilton's a good player, but if your passing attack all of a sudden looks like that when T.Y. Hilton's gone, like, you don't have enough weapons offensively. They lost Dante Moncrief this offseason, who shouldn't be a huge loss but appears to be a huge loss. Like, that, I look at the Colts and say they've got a ways to go. Even if Luck's going to play better than he did yesterday. Yesterday was a poor game from him on a lot of levels, even if it's encouraging because he could take the hit because he's getting the experience. But that is a team that what you pointed out on that, the play that I highlighted that is interesting is you said it was a zone dog. But that's a three-man rush that got to him. That's a three-man rush that got to him. Like, that's an indictment on guys in addition to Andrew Luck holding onto the ball. That they, I mean, you have two-on-one for two of the guys rushing, and the guy right up the middle got to him. I mean, just beat a guy clean. So they have some personnel issues that Luck can't control.
All right, we'll take a break there. Coming up, should we be encouraged or discouraged by Lamar Jackson's performance last night against Andrew Luck? That's next on First Things First. All right, last we have this awesome throw from Joe Flacco to his new teammate, John Smokey Brown. Look at the concentration in the toe tap there.
It's a heck of a catch to get both feet down after the bobble.
Good catch by John Brown. John Brown, they need him to come up with some big plays. Coming over from Arizona Cardinals, they need a lift from the wide receiving core. They're looking to get it from JB. Great catch here in the back of the end zone. Flacco put it where only his guy could catch.
And he's more known for his speed. At least he was in Arizona.
Yes, if he can develop into a slot receiver, it would be a huge help for them.
All right, let's keep it right there. Baltimore rookie Lamar Jackson with a tough game, competing for that starting quarterback job. He did throw a touchdown pass, but that was his lone highlight of the night. Finished with just 49 yards on 15 passes. Joe Flacco played three series, completed 7 of his 9 passes for 72 yards and a touchdown. You know what we have here, don't you? A conversation about the quarterback situation in Baltimore. CC, let's start with you. What was your impression of Lamar Jackson last night?
Well, I mean, if we're going to be fair to Lamar, we have to understand he's going to struggle in the NFL, especially just pure straight drop back and just reading the coverage when he recognizes which guy is going to be open and throwing the ball down the field. He looked like the quarterback that we thought from Louisville that he would look in the NFL. He's adjusting. He's adjusting to the speed of the game. But what I might be a little more concerned about is how much he watches the rush compared to watching the routes down the field. He is ready to bail out before he should be. So for me, I'd like to see him step up into the pocket and be able to wait for those receivers down the field. So anytime he gets any type of pressure, either flush from his left or to his right, you can see that he's ready to get out of the pocket. I think those things will come. And talking to Ozzie Newsome, he's a kid, when he does make mistakes, that he corrects those mistakes. He's very, very hard on himself. So Baltimore is satisfied with what they've seen. This is their third preseason game because they played in the Hall of Fame game. So he's gotten a lot of reps, but he is going to need those. Joe Flacco is the starter. If Baltimore, if they're trying to win games, Joe Flacco should be in there. Lamar is only a change of pace right now, and I'm not surprised that he has struggled maybe more so than the other quarterbacks taken in the first round, because from passing the football, he's got probably the longest way to go of all the quarterbacks that were drafted.
Oh, I don't think there's any question that he's got the longest way to go as far as being able to guy that can drop back and pass the ball 25 times a game, much less 30, 35 times a game. He's in an odd spot because if you would have asked me after the draft, who's the quarterback of the 5 quarterbacks taken most likely to play in some capacity in week 1? I would have picked Lamar Jackson. But if you would have asked me who's the quarterback least likely of the 5 quarterbacks taken to start at quarterback in week 1, I would have said Lamar Jackson. The encouraging part of yesterday was he had as poor of a start as you can have. He was 0-for-4. He was missing guys badly. There was one third down where I understand the receiver didn't run the greatest route. At least that's what they said in the broadcast. Didn't run the greatest route. Didn't appear he'd run the greatest route. But he had him wide open in a soft part of the zone and just threw a bad ball. He was as bad as you can be his first three series. And then he finished the game after that 7 of 11. And the play he made, see, I know you're talking about bailing out while in the pocket on the rush. What I thought was interesting about the touchdown pass was it was a third and two around the 10-yard line. He had the corner. He had already bailed out. He was rolling to his right. But he had the corner where he could have run for it, picked up the set of downs. Instead, he went to his third read and got the guy for a touchdown. In the moment, I thought he was going to run for it. He actually ended up throwing for it. If he would have run for it, it wasn't going to be a touchdown. It would have been a first down, but not a touchdown. That was encouraging, but it's going to be a lot of, oh, that's nice, mixed in with a lot of, okay, he is very raw throwing the football, and he's going to bail out more than the other guys because he's the best athlete of any of them. So he has more reason to believe that, okay, if I do bail out, it can still be a positive play, but we know long-term that's a good way to get hurt, and we haven't seen guys who do that repeatedly be high-level successful NFL guys.
So that's interesting, this idea of pocket discipline as being one of the things he really has to focus in on. CeCe, how hard is that to teach a young guy? Because I guess your instinct when you are as athletic as he is to want to bail and run. But how hard is it to teach a guy to stay in the pocket?
It's very hard to teach young quarterbacks who are very athletic because at every level, they've been able to escape the pressure. The guys least likely to be able to tackle them in space are the guys on the defensive line. But once you get to the NFL, you think those guys can't get to you till you get all those reps and you realize they can get to you, even on the touchdown pass. Nick, in his eyes, he might have thought he could have got to the corner, but he was going to take a big hit in trying to get there. He made the right decision by pulling up. That's the reason why they had a little soft roll on third down to try to move the pocket so he can get a better throwing lane. What I get concerned about him bailing in the pocket, not having discipline is because I wonder if he can see. Because I know guys who are challenged from a height standpoint, there are blind spots in that pocket. So I believe that Lamar, I know, based on talking to other quarterbacks that are his height, they can't see. So if he keeps bailing out, when will he ever be able to trust his feel, trust the route combinations, and be able to throw into those dark spots? Because that's what Russell did. He did it early. That's what Drew Brees did. That's what he – and they did
that
early.
And that's trusting your guys and trusting
your routes. You have to be able to trust the integrity of the pocket. That's what they call it. You have to know your left tackle is going to brush the guy past you. Your right tackle is going to stay a little more engaged. Guys on the line of scrimmage are going to either – know you can get help from your center, double teaming one of the defensive tackles. Those are things that you will gradually understand and get a feel for and won't be in a rush. Because if you are going to leave the pocket, I prefer for him to leave in the middle of the pocket so he can have his eyes down the field compared to spinning, taking his eyes off the wide receivers, because then you can't throw the ball when your head's down.
We saw Baker in his first preseason game do this at a much higher level than I would have expected any rookie quarterback to do, which is even when he was leaving the pocket, he wasn't leaving to run, and he was keeping his eyes upfield, and it's how he was able to make the big, if people remember it, third and I think 17 play on the sideline to Antonio Callaway, then it being challenged. Like, these are things that the Lamar has not yet developed, and if we're going to be totally fair, some people have questioned if he'll ever develop it. It's one of the reasons why people were saying, should he change position? Because even at the NFL level, he's still a dynamic athlete. Even by NFL standards and big, strong, fat, he is still a dynamic, quick-twitch athlete. He said one thing really interesting after the game that I wanted to get your take on, which is he said he thought one of the reasons he had the slow start was he didn't take advantage of the time when Flacco was in there to keep his shoulder loose. Like, and I read it, and I was like, that's an interesting thing to say. And I thought about it, like, how many games in Lamar's life has he not been the starter? You know what I mean? Has he been on the bench at the start when someone else was out there? And he said he now knows for the next preseason game that while Flacco's out there, to be staying loose like it's pregame.
Lamar, watch Tom Brady. Watch Tom Brady in the game where he knows he's not going to take a break. Watch how many throws he throws in between series when they're getting ready to go back out there. He's throwing the ball. That's what the veterans do. It's a lot of little things that people have to learn in trying to perfect their craft and being a professional. And it seems very, very simple, but I think that last night he understood that better when he went in there. And not rusty, but he wasn't ready to throw his fastball on that first play.
All right, quickly, we saw a pretty good Lamar Jackson in that second game. We saw shaky Lamar Jackson, some would say, at least to start out last night. Who would you say is sort of the real Lamar Jackson or closer to the athlete we're going to
see? I think right now what we are seeing is exactly who he is. A guy who, if he were to be an NFL starter today, would complete right around 50% of his passes, would make a few dynamic plays, and would look way over his skis. Like, you said this in the beginning, another quarterback not controversy, but a quarterback competition. This isn't a quarterback competition at the moment. Like Joe, now a year from now it could be Joe Flacco when they can move on from the contract, and they showed Joe Flacco since signing the contract last in the NFL in yards per attempt, last in the NFL in a lot of categories. They have reason to want to move on from Flacco, but right now, Lamar is that totally unmolded piece of clay we've talked about. He's going to show flashes, but he's not close to there.
Yeah, he's ready to play 10 or 15 snaps. It's going to be hard for him to develop, too, because they're going to ask him to be running around. He's not going to be coming in, subbing for Flacco, or being a wildcat where Flacco's on the field, and they're just going to have him drop straight back and throw the ball. So he's going to be doing things that necessarily don't lead to developing discipline in the pocket.
All right, we've got to take a break there. Coming up, is Teddy Bridgewater about to be traded? Next, this is First Things First. Don't miss the Big Three Championship Friday on Fox. Chris Anderson and Power will meet Drew Gooden and Three's Company to battle for the championship. Catch all the action starting at 8 Eastern on Fox. Stream it live on the Fox Sports app.
Man.
Three's Company, come and knock on my door.
Okay, all right. I'm sure that's a television reference I don't quite get, but I want to talk about this basketball game for a moment. See,
we got a
busy weekend.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Because Tiger's playing, what, 30 minutes away?
Yeah, I haven't solidified our invitation to that.
What are you?
Oh, we're in Brooklyn on Friday.
We're in Brooklyn
Friday. June bit me last night.
Okay.
Said we're good. All right, he said, man, promote this. I said, man, we pushing this on the street like a new drug.
Okay, all right.
Big Three, it's going down. Brooklyn, Friday night, 8 o'clock.
Because I got family in town this weekend, so I got to be out of the house. So Big Three Friday, golf Saturday, hanging out with you and Tribeca Sunday. Jenna, you'll be there Friday at the Big Three.
What's on Sunday? I didn't get the Sunday. What was the Sunday
thing? Chris and I hang out on Sunday. We plan for the week. We do things. Play a little bocce ball on his roof.
I've never been invited to a Sunday thing.
Yeah, because it's me and Chris time.
We invited you, but you brought those gifts that had you not get invited.
Time to go. I was one mistake. Time to go viral.
19.
Donovan Mitchell annihilated a homer at James Harden's charity softball game. It's about a show, and he's more than a basketball highlight reel. How about that shot?
Oh. The rookie of the year. Oh, can Ben Simmons do that?
Of course.
What's Ben Simmons doing this offseason?
He's figuring out which hand he's going to shoot with. Because I saw him make a half quarter with the hand he doesn't shoot with. I think when he comes back, he's going to have switched. What up, C?
The real rookie of the year. We appreciate it. That's talent right there.
MVP.
You know how hard it is to do that in softball? You got to generate all the power?
I don't know how hard it is doing softball. I'm not surprised Donovan Mitchell can do it. He's a great athlete. Ben Simmons would have hit it further.
Time for stories to start your morning. Monday Night Football, Andrew Luck was shaky. His backup was not. Jacoby Brissett, who sat behind Tom Brady and Jimmy G for a season, had a strong game last night, threw for 172 yards, completing over 60% of his passes. CC, what'd you think of Brissett's performance?
Oh, he looks good. He looks good. But I've been on this bandwagon for a long time. Not only did I see him play in high school, great high school basketball player there for Dwyer in West Palm Beach, tremendous football player, originally went to Florida, but Bill Parcells is mentoring him. All right. If I'm in Indianapolis, I keep this kid. All right. This kid's going to be a starter in the NFL for a long, long time. He's got a big arm and is a good enough athlete that can move around in the pocket.
And if a team tries to trade for Teddy Bridgewater, who I know we're going to talk about, and the Jets want too much, Jacoby's not a terrible second option. I was going to bring up the Parcells thing. The only time in my life I've ever had a phone conversation with Bill Parcells was you handed me the phone, and he was talking about this guy.
Yes.
And this was it was right after New England traded him, right when the show launched a year ago. And it was, I'm telling you, Jacoby Brissett, everyone's talking Jimmy Garoppolo. Jacoby Brissett's going to be a player in this league. I wasn't quite sure what he was talking about. We saw more of it last night.
Thanks, Coach.
I felt the same way when I got on the phone. I was the third one to get on the phone. Bill Parcells. Big news for a future Hall of Famer. Adrian Peterson signed with Washington yesterday. Peterson had an up-and-down season in 2017, playing for the Saints and the Cardinals. CC, how does AP fit with Washington?
Well, I'm happy for him. They need a running back. I mean, they need a running back bad. I mean, they lost
Geis,
the kid from LSU that we were very excited to see them take over the running attack there. Can Gruden come up with a system where Adrian can rush the football? If you look at the greatest running backs in the history of the league, Don't look at their last year if you want to see the best thing. The last year or two that they play, all of their numbers tend to suffer. So I expect him to suffer this year, just like he did in Arizona last year.
So a couple things. One is last year in Arizona, he had two monster games.
Yep.
And five really, really poor games. Can he have, does he have one more monster game left? Maybe two more monster games left? We'll see. But also, I don't know if it matters to him, but he's just shy of 40 yards rushing from moving past Jim Brown and into the all-time top 10. And this is a guy who, I'm not better than Jim Brown, but he is one of the 10 greatest running backs ever. It'd be a nice career accomplishment for him.
Yes.
Lucky break for the Buffalo Bills. Turns out quarterback A.J. McCarron did not actually fracture his collarbone. That means he'll return to practice soon, according to reports. That being said, Josh Allen will start the third preseason game. Nick, who do you think wins the starting job in Buffalo now that McCarron is back in the mix?
Just real quick, listen, America and football reporters, I have a hard enough time getting my man across from me here to pay attention to any of these reports. If we're going to get the injury reports wrong too now, I don't know how we're going to do a television show. You need to get your injury diagnoses right. I think A.J. McCarron now can win the starting job. He can play in the third preseason game. I don't think they wanted to start Josh Allen the first week of the season. Assuming he's healthy enough to play in the third preseason game, I think he'll be the week one starter.
I'm glad he doesn't have a broken collarbone, but I think they should go with Josh Allen. Talking to the coach this summer, they're very pleased with the way he's developed. And if you have a rookie that's that close to a veteran, you are better off getting the benefit of the reps of putting Josh Allen in the game. So, AJ, I'm glad he's not out for an extended period of time, but Josh Allen should be the answer week number one for the Bills.
All right, finally, the Cowboys receivers have an interesting training method to help build hand strength. They carry bricks after practice from one end zone to the other. The bricks weigh 25 pounds, for those of you considering this as a training method. CeCe, how does this help receivers?
Oh, this is great. The Dallas wide receiver coach, they've never done this drill before, but he came over with this drill. And what it does is allow your hand to become stronger. But also what people negate in thinking about wide receivers, they forget about the forearm, because a lot of times you're grabbing, not at the ball, but at other people's jersey, hands and everything. So your forearms get a lot stronger. Your ability to for your grip pressure to be able to increase, it's really hard to do that besides squeezing something. So it's allowing you to carry these bricks, strengthen your hands, also strengthen your forearms. So it's a little small thing, but that's how you become great at the craft. So great exercise by the wide receiver coach who's new there in Dallas.
How long they've been doing this, see? Something similar. I know famously Jerry Rice caught bricks from his dad, who was a brick mason or a bricklayer. He would throw them off the roof. Jerry would catch them when he was a kid, set them down. This is obviously a more evolved version of that.
Yes, there's another version that we saw Odell doing where
with
they
you.
Dropped the brick and they catch them in their hand. So this is a good team drill to be able to do as a wide receiver coach or as a youth coach. Get you some smaller bricks or some rocks. You know, the kids always have some rocks around them and everything. But we've seen Odell and other guys where you don't have to walk with it and you can basically drop it and you still increase that overall grip pressure. Grip pressure is very, very important as far as catching the football in traffic in NFL.
And when you're doing something like this is because all the receivers lined up, and they did a bit of a contest. Who could do it the longest?
Yes.
Is that just a test of will more than a test of strength? Like, Cole Beasley won it, and someone said it to me. I was like, Cole Beasley better win it. He has to win every drill that has to do with almost determination, because when you're that size, that speed, you've always got to be the guy who lasts the longest on those types of drills. What is that? Who's supposed to win those types of drills?
The best player. The best player is supposed to be the best at everyone. That's what I've always done. I'm always going to be first. If they run 3 miles, they run 30 yards. Like, besides Randy Moss, like, I'm going to try to be first. And if they can't get me, if I can't get them because of the speed of it, I can hang in there longer than anyone else. So the best players, you're hoping that they're the best at these little things. That's the best example.
Mm. Cole Beasley won it.
There you go. That's our guy.
There
best rapper on the team. Best.
It might have something to do with gravity and stuff. He's closer to the ground or something.
Moving on, the Jets have themselves a surplus at the quarterback position, a sentence no human has ever said before. While Sam Darnold is trending to become the week one starter, teams are beginning to inquire about Teddy Bridgewater. According to reports, at least two teams have called Jets and expressed interest in the former Vikings quarterback. CeCe, which team would be the best fit for Teddy Bridgewater?
The New York Jets. You know how long they've been searching for a quarterback? Like, goodness gracious, like, Teddy is 25 years old. Why trade him? If people want him now, people are going to keep calling. People kept calling for New England, even though Belichick said, I'm not going to trade Garoppolo. Oh, okay, we'll keep calling. Kyle Shanahan, ultimately, he got a phone call where Belichick called him. Quarterbacks are a commodity. If you have them and they're young, keep them. His value is only going to go up. And he's going to have to play some football this year. Even if they start Sam Darnold, he's not going to be able to make it through the whole season and not be injured.
But they got McCown if they need an emergency quarterback. And so, look, what
haven't you seen Josh McCown play enough?
I have seen Josh McCown play.
So, do you want to see him in the game?
I think Teddy's better. I think right now Teddy's the best quarterback on the roster, to be clear. But I think they are going to start Sam Darnold. And I also think Darnold, McCown, Teddy, they're not competing for a playoff spot. So, like, maybe look at this from a different, slightly different perspective. As far as not if you're running the Jets and keeping him. If you're running another team, which of these teams should have the most interest? I came up with four teams. Tell me what you think. There's Jacksonville. Now, Jacksonville, I think, should have pursued him more this offseason. Jacksonville, I think, maybe already made their bed by giving Blake Bortles an extension. They didn't have to. And if you want to say Jacksonville made the AFC Championship game, they want to run it back, fine. But then there's Miami, there's Tampa, and there's Denver. Miami has Ryan Tannehill. We haven't seen him play football in over a year. This is the last year that his guaranteed money is so onerous on the team that they can't move off him. Next year, they'd be able to. Denver, we know they're looking for a backup. And when Case Keenum's your starter, with respect to our friend Jenna Wolf, you might also be looking for a starter. And in Tampa, they know Jameis Winston's not there for at least 3 weeks to start the year. Their plan is Ryan Fitzpatrick, who some would argue is Josh McCown with a better beard. Like, those three teams, if I'm running those three teams, Miami, Denver, and Tampa, I'm taking the temperature on what it would take to get Teddy from the Jets.
Okay, let's go by those teams one by one. Jacksonville, you can't bring Teddy there because they've been saying they weren't aggressive in the New England game. So they're going to be more aggressive with Blake Bortles during the season. So Blake Bortles is going to be playoff Blake Bortles during the regular season, like playoff Rondo. Next team, let's go Miami. You can't invest the type of money they've invested in Ryan Tannehill and bring in a guy who's been a successful starter and who's younger than you in Teddy Bridgewater. In Tampa, Jameis still, they don't know if Jameis is the quarterback of the future. Jameis is a lot better than Teddy, though. So you can't bring him there because Jameis might leave you. And then you're stuck with who? Fitzpatrick and Teddy Bridgewater. So your quarterback situation got worse. Denver is the only place that I believe is real. Case, he has a 2-year deal. Teddy is still very, very young. I believe Teddy is a better quarterback than Case. I told y'all that last year. And the Vikings and their people there, if they didn't have that tremendous momentum, Teddy would have gotten a chance to take over that Vikings team last year. So out of those four teams, I think the only real one, because you send a message to the rest of the Tannehill, all right? Blake Bortles and Jameis. As far as Jameis, you send a mixed message to them as far as we're just going to throw this year away.
But if you're the Jets, you don't even listen to offers. I mean, we're assuming, given what we've heard from the Jets owner, Sam Darnold is the guy. You have a guy who can at least come in. They've paid $10 million to in Josh McCown. You don't listen to offers for Teddy Bridgewater
is a commodity, all right? And the Jets need to be able to fetch a good reward for that commodity. Why be in a rush? If you're able to resurrect Teddy's career in two preseason games, what do you think when someone else gets hurt? No one's even gotten hurt yet.
Well, I think if I'm the Jets before the trade deadline, before the year's up, the best return I'm going to get on my 1-year investment in Teddy Bridgewater is a draft pick, is a trade. But I agree with C in this regard. It does not have to be before the season starts. You can wait and see if there is a situation where a Sam Bradford type of injury, where a team all of a sudden is desperate, where a team all of a sudden will give more than they're offering right now. We haven't yet had a quarterback injury from a team that thinks they can contend this year. And that, by the way, that's a small needle, because a lot of teams that think they can contend because of their quarterback. And if their quarterback gets hurt, they might throw the year away to a degree, or they might not want to give up a draft pick for Teddy. But a team that thinks that we have a good enough roster,
right,
and that Teddy's as good as our current quarterback, like, I could think on the list of the teams like that. Denver's one of those teams. It's why C mentioned to them that they would be a good fit. I think Miami, I think Adam Gase knows, like, time's running quick, and so they got to figure out what's going on with Tannehill there as well.
we talk about Teddy Bridgewater, and I think a lot of us just talk about post-injury Teddy Bridgewater. But when he was really good in 2015, what made him such a great quarterback?
He's a really smart quarterback. He reads coverages very, very quick. His recognition and diagnosis going from one receiver to the third is very, very good. Now, you see, he's an African-American quarterback, but he's not a great athlete. He's just a good enough athlete in the pocket that, yes, if something breaks down, yes, he is not a statue in the pocket. But Teddy, it's about diagnosis, about his leadership. It's about a fresh face in the building, positive. Teddy's been a great leader no matter where he's been. He's played on some good teams. The Miami Northwestern team in downtown Miami. He led that team with a bunch of Division I players, led them to a state championship. Went to Louisville. We saw what he did with that program. The Vikings got them in the playoffs. They should have beaten Seattle.
They had a playoff game won. Teddy drove them down the field.
Misses a chip shot.
Yeah.
So Teddy Bridgewater, the only reason why he's not in Minnesota was that horrific knee injury, and because Case caught lightning in a bottle, and they had decided to move on to Kirk Cousins.
Intelligence, leadership, and accuracy. Those are Teddy's three calling cards. Does not have the strongest arm, is not a great athlete, and obviously, even though he's been good in these two preseason games, he took the one hit on that same knee that he had the horrific injury, popped right back up. You do worry until you see more sustained action from him about his durability, but he's smart, teammates love him, and he is wildly accurate.
And I can guarantee you, no one's going to call cap, so people will be looking for a quarterback. Teddy Bridgewater, they're going to keep calling.
And that comeback from that knee injury, nothing shy of remarkable. Really great story there. All right, coming up, how worried should Tom Brady be about all his missing teammates? Eric Mangini joins us next on First Things First. Back here on First Things First, former NFL coach Eric Mangini joins the show. Hey, Coach.
Hi, Jenna. How are you?
Good to see you, sir.
No handshake today?
Oh, see, I tried to stop the weird
handshake. Oh, did you?
You missed it.
No, I knew it.
See, someone's got to give me a heads up or change the game.
I get made fun of for the handshake, but then I don't do it.
Chris, you see how nervous his arm got?
I was going to see. Is he going to say anything?
He's big weird,
He said something. And so I knew you.
I got to get the scouting report.
Absolutely.
Did we get to the bottom of that? We've got a system.
Yeah, coach.
He's going to stop week number 8 looking at the schedule.
Oh, you know what? This is coach's schedule group.
If you know anything about the Patriots, it's that they rarely worry about anything. Trailing in a game, no problem. Edelman out 4 games, no problem. Losing the first round pick offensive lineman Isaiah Wynn for the season, leaving Tom Brady basically exposed, no problem. When asked about replacing Wynn, Bill Belichick said, quote, depth's like an insurance policy. If you need it, then you're glad you have it. All right, Coach, how big of a loss is this for Brady and the Patriots, losing Wynn on the offensive line?
It hurts. It hurts a lot. And it is interesting when we talk about New England, everybody talks with a sense of calm and they'll be able to replace, you know, this guy easily or that guy easily, as opposed to, you know, we need to go trade for Khalil Mack and get Tom Brady more help. Like, we don't usually talk about that with New England, and there's good reason for it. The idea that Trent Brown is their starting left tackle, I was with Trent in San Francisco when we drafted him in the 7th round. He's a giant man, but I never would have thought he'd be the starting left tackle for the New England Patriots 4 years later. But that's what Dante Scarnecchia does, and I brought his name up a ton of times. Mm-hmm. He needs to be in the New England, like, Ring of Fame or whatever that is around the stadium, because he has done such a good job with so many different guys fitting in, similar to the way they do the job they do with the receiver. So I'm not as worried because of Dante and the things that they're able to do and the way that they'll help whoever comes in at right tackle, and the way that they'll help the offensive line to allow them to be successful. But whenever you lose your first-round draft pick, who is an emerging player, I mean, it's terrible.
I'm not underselling at all the job Dante Scarnecchia does. I've heard you talk about him and others talk about him in glowing ways the way I've never heard an offensive line coach talked about. So I recognize that. But isn't it fair to say we don't yet know the job he's going to do with Trent Brown? They traded for Trent Brown during the draft. Like, they, in addition to trading for Trent Brown, they used their number one pick on a guy who they wanted to transition from guard to tackle. Like, the reason that this guy who you thought would never potentially in 4 years be the left tackle for the Patriots is going to be the starting left tackle is not necessarily because that was the plan from the get-go. That is now the only plan they have. They lost their swing tackle this offseason to Dallas. Obviously, Nate Solder left in free agency. And so two guys they acquired on draft day, Isaiah Wynn and Trent Brown, were supposed to compete for that spot. And now Isaiah Wynn's out of the competition for either tackle spot for this season. Like, I'm not saying he can't do a good job with Trent Brown, but I don't know if Trent Brown can play left tackle in this league at a starting capacity.
Well, he's been working at left tackle. He's been playing in the games. Have you talked about him?
What? From the preseason games?
Yeah.
No.
Have you stepped back and go, oh, wow, they've got a real problem with protection in New England?
No.
Then he can play left tackle for the Patriots. I mean, the fact that it hasn't come up and it hasn't been an issue is really encouraging. Obviously, it's a little bit too much of a stretch to make that decision now, but we're not talking about the issues they have. We're not talking about Nate Solder's replacement creating havoc for Tom Brady. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's a good indication of the fact that, you know, the problem, maybe it's not perfect, but it's better than people thought.
No, they got problems, though. The left tackle, now, is he as good as the left tackle that they had Nate Solder? No. But Dante Starnecchia, they are going to be staying up late at night because they're going to have to be very, very creative in the run game. And I believe it's more important that they develop some type of running attack because they don't know who's going to be there on the offensive line. And you can't back Tom Brady up 45 times a game and think you're going to be able to survive him at 41 years of age. So I just believe it's very, very important that they come up with some identity in the first month of the season. I wouldn't be surprised if they struggled. If you look at New England, when do you want to play them? You definitely don't want to play them in January. You don't want to play them in February. Mm-hmm. But if you keep going back in the months, December, November, you got a chance. But, man, October, that's your last real month. September is where they can be got because they're still trying to find. And if you look at their record month after month, it just gets better and better. And I think that they'll try to figure this out in the first month of the season, that being that they'll go a little unbalanced line at some times. They'll go two tight ends. They can't play as much two backs or three receivers as they want to because you have to be able to protect that offensive line and protect Tom Brady. That will be a priority coming out of training camp. So when we see week number one, we will see what they've come up with. But it'll be really interesting to see as we go through games 1 through 4 how much they change and what's their identity.
And I always thought that the early part of the season was the hardest part of the season because you don't know what you're getting from everybody else, and there's changeover in coordinators and head coaches, so that dramatically changes the scheme. But you also don't truly know who you are. So you, and I've said this before, you go into the preseason, you go into training camp thinking you're going to be this, but then the reality is you could be something totally different. And what I always thought we did a good job of in New England is accepting who we were and what we did and building on that as opposed to constantly trying to be something we weren't. And each year it evolved a little bit differently.
So let me ask it a different way. Is their offensive line their biggest concern, in your opinion, on this Patriots team?
No, I that's not a big concern. Is it terrible that they lost their starting right tackle and a young guy? Yeah, that's not great. Is it my biggest concern? No. I think Dante and I think Josh and I think Tom will figure it out.
I would be more concerned about their defensive line as a unit because you don't have a quarterback. If you have a weak unit, which their offensive line is one of their weaker units, a quarterback can save that. A good offensive line coach by knowing what you can and can't do. If you don't have no pass rush, you have to blitz, you have to play more man-to-man. Those are things I still would be more concerned about. Coach, would you agree with that coming out of New England at this point, even though they did create a pass rush in their first couple of games?
And just based off of last year, they obviously struggled defensively. They lost their defensive coordinator, so they don't have that continuity. They don't really have a one guy who's going to call the shots. It's sort of a group effort. Bill will be involved, but there's still a lot of young guys who are going to make decisions about game plan and about when to call things, and they're going to learn throughout that process. And it's not like they were starting from a great point last year.
Well, and listen, this is one of the things I believe you love about the Patriots. Chris, you had the great quote that I believe Bill Belichick told you or said publicly, which is, it's not my job to get the best players. It's my job to get the best team. Mm-hmm. I hope I'm not mangling that quote. If it were...
It's not about great players. It's about a great team.
Okay.
Producing that.
Right. Producing a great team. If it were any team other than the Patriots, and we did just a blind look at the roster, and we said, okay, their number one receiver left in free agency. What they got back for it was a draft pick who's now not going to play for them. Their guy who they thought was going to come in and be their number one receiver, he suspended the first 4 weeks of the season. Their number one corner left in free agency. What they got for him was Jason McCourty. Like, we go down the list, right? They lost Deion Lewis in free agency. They lost Danny Amendola in free agency without bringing a lot of guys back in. I know in the running back backfield they brought in Jeremy Hill. They drafted Sony Michel, but they lost their left tackle in free agency. All these things, we would say, man, that team is not equipped to be nearly as good this year as they were last year. With New England, we don't have those. We have learned since they've won at least 12 games every year since 2010 that they will find a way. I do think Chris's point about the first month is a time to get them, and the fact that you make fun of me on the schedule grid, first two games of the year, Houston and Jacksonville. There's two things I know. Those are two teams with excellent pass rushes. Clowney's back as a full participant at practice this week. Watt, Clowney, Merciless the first week. Maybe the best front in football in Jacksonville, certainly in the AFC in week two. That's a tough opening 2 weeks if you're in flux on the offensive line when you also don't have Julian Edelman. Like, there are things there where there would be concerns, but it's not a flashing red light like it would be for any other team because they've earned that benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, they've earned that through the years, but also they don't have the greatest football coach ever. And that's what New England has in Bill Belichick. They don't have potentially the greatest player ever in Tom Brady. So typically, Gronk being out, Edelman being out, they got 12 back there. And 12 has been able to overcome all those things. I believe this is one of the more tough obstacles that they will have to overcome, and that would be losing Nate Solder in free agency, and then now losing Isaiah Wynn, their first-round draft pick, early in training camp.
And New England may lose household names, but then New England creates household names. And so there'll be a whole nother group of names, whether it's the receiving core, whether it's a young offensive lineman, who nobody knows right now, who people will know about shortly. And that's all based on the fact that they're able to go in, do their role in that system, and they win. And when they win, everybody's boat is risen up.
Yeah, I didn't know Coach Mangini until he went to New England.
Boom, just like that.
And now we all know you. Stick around, Coach. Yeah. Coming up, how worried should the Colts be about Andrew Luck next month for Back here with Coach Mangini. Coach, Indy fans waited with bated breath for the return of Andrew Luck. They would have loved the 2016 Luck. They would have settled for a pretty good 2018 Luck. They got neither. In his first home game in 600 days, Luck struggled, completed 6 of his 13 passes for just 50 yards, tough couple of sacks and an interception. Despite all of that, though, Andrew Luck still managed to be upbeat after the game.
I'm very, very encouraged, both, one, by how I feel. I feel great, great, which is, it makes me happy, but then two, the attitude of the guys and going out and playing football. I told someone after the game, I was like, ah, man, I'm sort of happy to have been sacked by, you know, Suggs and a legit, like, you know, sack. I was like, oh, I landed on my right elbow. It's sort of reminiscent of how I injured my shoulder a couple years ago, and I didn't feel anything, didn't give it a second thought. So, I think that's actually a big deal for me, you know, and being able to sort of lose that that thought bubble, if you will, that thought cycle.
Coach CC is questioning Andrew Luck's state of mind.
It reminds me of a guy,
conference.
Of one of my roommates and stuff when they came from High Street, and that's a street in Columbus where all the bars and everything are, but he had a little bout with some mushrooms or something there. That's what that guy
Luck does have a
he
great disposition.
Has
man.
A great
I loved
disposition.
Getting sacked by Terrell Suggs. It was great.
Best time
I was
ever.
Happy about it. He, I mean, it's
all right.
A great outlook on life.
Two preseason games now. Where does Andrew Luck stand? What do you think about his comeback now?
I actually get why he's so happy. And from a coaching perspective, I'd be happy too. The fact that he went through the process of getting hit, of dealing with that type of contact, and he does feel good. It's not like he's got soreness in the arm. It's not like they've had any type of setbacks. He's playing in games. Now, look, this is a new offense. It's something that he has to learn as well as everybody else. So he's dealing with the comeback. He's dealing with all the firsts that you go through as an injured athlete, and he's learning a new offense. I wouldn't be happy about trying to use the tight end to chip on Terrell Suggs. I think I would get that addressed in the meeting. But the other stuff, I think it's gonna come for him, and he's gonna get better.
Yeah, I think the live game action is very, very helpful, and he gave us a glimpse. Just a brief moment where an athlete gave us some honesty, because we all go through that. Once we've been injured, we all go through, we have questions, man, can we do this? And he's been very, very just real as far as where he thought his career was. And there were times where he thought that he wasn't going to be able to play football again. So getting sacked and having that thought bubble removed and falling on his elbow the way he was injured a couple years ago. But at the end of the day, man, he's got to have some players to be able to throw to. Even when he makes the bad decision in the red zone, he's trying to do too much. The fullback is running the flat route. He's getting ready to run out of bounds. The fullback's going to be challenged catching the ball anyway. Yeah. So I don't even know why you're going to throw to him. And then you got a tight end that's getting ready to run out of bounds also. So these two guys are not going to be able to make Andrew Luck get good. Sell the ball out of bounds. Know your personnel. Know that fullback. It's not going to be able to do anything. That tight end's not going to be able to make that play.
What's Jack Doyle doing?
Just protect the field goal, protect the 3 points. So don't try to do too much in that instance. But I like the fact that he's able to get real contact. He's able to even make mistakes, because that play, coach, you know, is blown dead in practice. So to be able to see how guys are reacting at real speed, I think it helps him, Nick.
And he doesn't need to do this. And I don't think he would necessarily do this in a regular season game. I think that's one of those plays where it is his first time having this extended exposure. He's trying to make a play. He's trying to see how well he can do that. This is a really poor decision that you don't typically see from him.
One of the things, Coach, you've said that I've also said about Luck, which is one of the reasons he was the most hit and one of the most pressured quarterbacks while he was healthy, was because of personnel, because of offensive line, and some of it was his own doing. Some of it was holding onto the ball too long, trying to make heroic plays when he didn't need to do that. I want to show the other sack he took, and you tell me what you see on it, because I see a guy who held onto the ball far too long. I mean, we had a clock on it. He's untouched for until you get to the 4 second mark. Now, the clock runs a little late from where he's first touched, but he is untouched to the 4 second mark. To me, this is one of those times. Now, he doesn't get hurt. They whistle the play dead. They don't even take him to the ground. That's something Luck's got to get the ball out of his hands quicker. Chris saw something a little different than I did. What do you see on that play?
Well, I see the first-round draft pick at a center getting bowled back, and this is the center of the pocket. He knows he's got a guy bailing out to the left, so they've got 3-on-2 over the left. All three guys on the left, the center, the left guard, the left tackle, they're all first-round draft picks. If I'm Andrew Luck, I would like to think that the center of the pocket is going to stay firm when I have three guys blocking two. I mean, did he hold it too long? I don't know. I think those guys should be able to hold up. This to me wasn't a heroic play. It that I've seen him do a bunch of times where it's a 5-yard completion and he's getting blown up. There is actually a hat for a hat there.
Right, and you have to be careful. They had a little zone dog on him. They brought three off his strong side, off his right, and then dropped the guy into coverage. So he had to recognize that. They changed coverage on him. When you get flushed in the pocket, sometimes the best decision is not throwing the football, eating it right there and punting. Coaches teach us all the time, you will not lose games punting. But you try to throw over that guy's head, you get hit with your arm extended, that ball gets tipped, you get intercepted. This game is a lot easier when we watch it in replay. But watching it live and being in action, it's hard to make all the right decision. He didn't make a bad decision there. So a lot of times with Andrew Luck, we're going to watch him now and be like, Andrew Luck, he needs to get rid of the football. So every time we're going to be like, throw the football, get rid of the football, don't run the football. Right. Andrew Luck is a football player. And a lot of the decisions that he had, now that he looks back on them and saying, you know something, I got to be available for the franchise. But he is still a football player, and his overall toughness, that's the reason why people thought he would be one of the all-time greats.
All right, if you taken away the hit that he took and the fact that he came out healthy, which obviously was the number one priority, what else did you see from Andrew Luck? What did you take away? Was there anything you saw that you're like, all right, I could see the remnants of who he was and who he could be this season?
Yeah, he hasn't played in a long time. And for quite a while during the preseason, he was throwing with, an undersized football. Mm-hmm. And then we didn't know when he would be in pads. Then he finally took some practice. All these things are big accomplishments, and they don't seem like big accomplishments. But after losing all of last year and after having the injury either misdiagnosed or mistreated, these are great steps. And every time that he goes through a week and he's not overly sore, he goes through the week and he starts understanding
keep
the offense.
Those boxes.
Yeah, you keep checking those boxes. They've got a real chance. And I know I had heard you earlier saying this to you, the Colts weren't a contender. But if Andrew Luck plays and plays like I expect him to, they get a chance to play with anybody.
Well, listen, I know you're not a big fan of if a quarterback is one of the elite quarterbacks, one of the top paid quarterbacks, talking about the personnel around him. And so I know that's one of your pressure points. I just look at the personnel around him and I say, okay, I know T.Y. Hilton wasn't out there last night. But even if he was, how good are his receivers? When's the last time, if it was the last time Andrew Luck had an above-average running back when he was at Stanford? Because he doesn't have it this year, at least no one that we know of. Who is the biggest defensive playmaker on the Indianapolis Colts? Is it Malik Hooker? Because Malik Hooker is a fine player, but if he's your best of your 11 starters, that means you don't have a great defensive player, much less a great defensive team. And so I look at the AFC South for a long time has been the weakest division in the conference, one of the weakest divisions in football. I don't think that's the case anymore, not with Houston coming back healthy, Tennessee being a playoff team, and Jacksonville being a team in the AFC Championship last year. I just don't see the personnel around Luck, even if he is the Luck of a few years ago.
But you've got three number one draft picks on your offensive line.
Yep.
Okay, they should help with the running game. They should help give Andrew Luck time to allow receivers to get open. And you only have limited resources. They've spent a lot of resources on that offensive line. That should improve those other areas. In terms of the defense, there's a new defensive coordinator. Everything is new. He's dealing with that component of this as well. A new system, a new approach, all those different things. We're going to have to see how that plays out.
The one thing that I see, too, is Andrew Luck has a lot of confidence in who's coaching him. And Frank Wright, they have a great relationship. You could hear that in the telecast last night. And also, he has confidence in the organization and the medical staff. That's not something that he had last year. So it's not always just X's and O's. It's not always did I get sacked, did I throw to a back, to a check down, did I read the coverage. Andrew Luck has confidence in the people that have control over his life. And that's a great thing for the Colts and for the NFL.
All right, we'll take a break there, Coach. We'll see you a little bit later. Coming up, Alabama's back on top in the polls, but should they be? That's next on First Things First. All right, moving on to college football. Alabama, the Crimson Tide are number one in the AP preseason poll. Clemson, Georgia, Wisconsin round out your top four. It is the third straight season Alabama is ranked number one to start the year, and the fifth time under head coach Nick Saban. The only question seemingly, which of their two very good quarterbacks will start when the Tide open their season against Louisville? CeCe, how impressive is Alabama's dominance?
Oh, it's impressive. This is as impressive as I have seen a thing since the University of Miami, and they had that run of great players that end up being great pros. Saban has it going. He's got it going on down there in Alabama. He's got the Tide rolling, and that's through recruiting. Not just blue-chip players, five-star players, but he's been able to replace key staff members, that being offense and defensive coordinator, Kirby Smart, who was the heir apparent. He was going to take over. If Saban left Alabama, Kirby Smart was going to be the heir apparent and take that job. He left, end up going back to his alma mater in Georgia and taking that job. So seeing him replace people like Lane Kiffin, seeing him replace Sark year after year, losing coaches, and they also 12 players in this year's NFL draft. So what Nick Saban done is very, very impressive. Maybe only one run the last 30 years I've seen more impressive, and that's what Miami did.
Listen, since 2009, every single season that has been played in college football, Alabama has either started as the number one or ended as the number one, and a few seasons both.
Wow.
Except for 2014, when they started as number two, and Ohio State and Zeke Elliott beat them in the – that's the – actually, I'm sorry, the year after that. That was the year they lost in the Sugar Bowl to, I think, the Oklahoma that season. But every year but one, they at least start as number one or end as number one. I had gotten a little – I don't love dynasties in college sports because you can't attach a player to it. But the last few years, even though Alabama's been just as dominant because there has been the intrigue because of the playoff and because Clemson almost beat them, then did beat them. It looked like Georgia had them beat, and then they end up coming back. It doesn't feel like it's a foregone conclusion, right? It feels like there is, as great as Alabama is, it feels like they can be beaten, and the playoff adds to that. It's it's unbelievable. People get up jealous of it. They get upset about it. But they say, he gets like 30 first-round picks every year. Well, I mean, that's available to everyone, technically. Theoretically, anybody could have the recruiting success Nick Saban does, theoretically.
What people don't give Nick Saban credit for, he's the best developer of talent in college football. Is he the best college recruiter? Yes, he's that. Do they have the best facilities? Yes, they do have that. But Nick Saban does not get a five-star and that kid turns out to be a three or four star. If the ability's there, Nick will get the best out of that ability. So a lot of times we don't give Coach enough credit for developing that talent. That
and
he does
for
have.
Developing sort of how his season goes. Any other team, you have two starting quarterbacks. That's not necessarily a good thing. Sometimes you have issues with it. Nick Saban is the kind of coach that can turn that into a very, very good thing. He takes all the sort of personal feelings out of it and just treats it as sort of this is who's going to go in. And we've heard that because he didn't even talk to Jalen Hurts this entire time sort of leading up to it.
Yeah, I don't know if I can necessarily agree with that one. He's trying to be a little tricky, trying to play a little dirty pool on this one. He could botch this one up because Jalen.
You think he can?
Oh, there's no doubt. He's already actually messed it up because not communicating with Jalen is kind of hurt Jalen. Jalen deserves a little communication as far as starting 2 years for Alabama and what he's done with that institution.
But you would say he maybe didn't botch it because Hurts hasn't left yet. I think the assumption was that he might leave, and now he's got both his guys there heading into
the season.
Well,
if you're looking at it from the coach's perspective, yeah, it's great for him. It's not great for the kid. All right, so yeah. Saban has not done this kid any favors by not naming the starter. I would be shocked if Tua is not the starter in week number one.
Right, so like that is, I think to your point, Jenna, that he is maybe doing anything and everything to give Alabama the best chance to win another national championship. I think from afar, I look at it and say, Alabama going to be the favorite whether Jalen Hurts is there or not. Like, barring an injury to Tua, he's not doing right by the player, but listen, you don't get to where Nick Saban is by always being the nice guy. Like, we're focused on Jalen Hurts because he has accomplished so much. We feel like he deserved a conversation, an honest conversation. But how many kids at Alabama see think they have a scholarship and then don't because a different recruit that they didn't think was coming over then decides to come over? Like, we have guys at these programs, and Alabama's at the top of the list, where for some people it is a great story of success, of getting an education, of winning. And for some guys it's, man, I wish I hadn't gone there. I didn't get to play. I got misled like that. But that's not just a Nick Saban thing. That is top level college football throughout the programs.
Yes.
So then what is it about him that makes kids want to go play for him, knowing that the competition is going to be high, knowing there's a chance that all this could happen? Because
these things are true about Nick Saban. Nick Saban's a tremendous teacher of football. He is on the field teaching a position or multiple positions every single day. He is not just a CEO. He is not just a CFO. He runs that program. Their facilities are state of the art. How they take care of the players, the accommodations, the food, the different specialists that he has them seen. If they have some type of reading issue, if they have anxiety issues, might be bipolar. All these things, Nick Saban is wired in. He will hire the best of the best. And what he challenges the athletes to do is test your ability against the other great athletes in the country. All right? Come to Alabama and let me mold you into a great football player, into a great man. And the other thing that Nick Saban will not get credit for, he graduates as high a rate of players as anyone in the league. He will get you your college degree. If you commit 4 or 5 years to Alabama, you might have 2 or 3 knee surgeries because those practices are very, very tough. But Nick Saban, he will develop you and he will get your college education.
And the coaching and therefore also the recruiting is why Alabama can lose 8 of their 11 starters from last year to this year, and they are consensus top 3 defense. 8 of their 11 defensive starters, I should
yes.
say.
Mm-hmm.
They only have 3 returning defensive starters. Nobody doubts how great the defense is going to be because 5 stars.
Yeah, they will definitely be a top 10 defense.
No doubt.
All right, let's take a break. Coming up, why is John Gruden calling Derek Carr the most talented quarterback he's ever coached? That's next on First Things First. Stories to start your morning. Monday Night Football. Andrew Luck was shaky. His backup was not. Jacoby Brissett, who sat behind Tom Brady and Jimmy Garoppolo for a season, had a strong game last night. Threw for 172 yards, completing over 60% of his passes. Nick, what'd you think of Brissett's performance?
Man, see, I've been telling you, my guy Bill Parcells always been high on Jacoby. I talked to Bill Parcells through Chris Carter, obviously, last year. I really think it was the day of our first show, because it was a couple days after Jacoby had been traded, right before the season started. Mm-hmm. And he said, man, everyone's focused on, he might not have said man, but he said, everyone's focused on Jimmy Garoppolo.
Yo.
I think,
he put that jersey on.
Yeah.
Yes.
The Patriots had, he told us the Patriots had three starting quarterbacks, Brady, Garoppolo, and Brissett. No one was saying that about Brissett. We saw him show flashes last year. He's continued to build on that. He's a guy teams might call about as a potential trade at some point.
Let's not forget who his head coach is. It's Frank Wright. Frank Wright, who did he coach last year? Nick Foles. Yeah. When people were saying, oh, trade Nick. No, no, keep Nick Foles. And that's exactly what the Colts should do. They are building, which will be even a better asset. Jacoby Brissett will be a starting quarterback in the NFL in the next 2 years.
Wow. All right. Lucky break for the Buffalo Bills. It turns out A.J. McCarron did not actually fracture his collarbone, which means he'll return to practice soon, according to reports. That being said, Josh Allen will start the third preseason game. All right, Nick, who do you think wins the starting job in Buffalo now that A.J. McCarron is back in the mix?
I think their plan all along was to start A.J. McCarron. And if all this injury meant was he missed a few practices and he can still play in the third preseason game, I don't know why they would change that plan. Now, I know they've changed a little bit because now Josh Allen is starting the third preseason game, but I think they are better off with A.J. being their week one starter.
That was their plans heading into training camp. That was their plan when Josh Allen got drafted. We'll take our time. But in talking to the head coach a couple weeks ago at the Hall of Fame game, man, Josh Allen is closing the deal. A.J. McCarron has not been impressive in his short time there in Buffalo. And they know Josh Allen is the face of the franchise. So Josh Allen, week number one with the Bills. Bills Mafia getting it done.
What happened to your boy Nate?
Nate Peterman?
His mom and them, they said, take him out the game. After the fifth interception, she said, I can't take no more. This NFL is tough.
A little basketball now. Celtics took down the Sixers in the second round of the Eastern Conference playoffs last season, and Ben Simmons has not forgotten. He said, quote, recently, we got to get past Boston. Those are the guys at the top right now. Nick, can they do it? Can the Sixers surpass the Celtics this season?
I mean, you guys know where I stand on this. I'm a man on a bit of an island. I think the Sixers, by the end of the season, will be the best team in the East. I do find it interesting that I know this is the team that the Sixers lost to, but everyone seems to just be overlooking Toronto. Toronto team that was the number one seed and did, by the way, add Kawhi Leonard. But I understand Ben Simmons. They played these guys. They're focused on these guys, saying they got to beat these guys.
Yeah, I like the fact that that is their focus. They understand that the best team, the most talented team, and it was the team that beat them. Yes, I like that. I'd like to be able to see some highlights of him shooting the ball outside the restricted area.
Well, you're not
going to
get those
though.
From last year. They didn't exist from last
oh,
year.
Oh, and we don't have any from this offseason, so God forbid he goes to a gym and learns how to shoot a jump shot.
I think he's doing that. He just wants to surprise you come opening day.
Oh, he's not going to surprise me, because I've seen people like Ben Simmons before. We sit around and be like, oh, he's going to learn how to shoot 5 years in.
Dwight Howard.
It's been 1 year. Let's give him our 2 years.
Oh, whoa, okay. There we go.
He had a red shirt year. Chill out, man.
All right. Speaking of Kawhi and the Raptors, we end with him. The Raptors are hiring one of Kawhi's longtime friends for a coaching role, a move that will hopefully keep the former NBA Finals MVP happy in Toronto. Cece, what do you make of moves like this?
Man, this is all part of life. You ever been in a building, this guy, they got the same last name, be like, ah, oh, is that a coincidence? No. You know somebody. Part of life is what you know, and getting your education is very important. But another huge part of life is, man, knowing someone who knows someone. So I don't even act as if why anyone would be concerned. LeBron, when he went from Cleveland to Miami, he took some people with him. When he went from Miami back to Cleveland, he took some more people there with him. And when the Los Angeles Lakers and Magic Johnson said, hey, LeBron James, there happened to be anyone else you might want around here besides players, I'm sure there are accommodations. So we have seen this in sports. We've seen this with coaches, front office. We talked about Jerry Colangelo. What about his son? His son was the GM of the 76ers, and people wonder, how that guy get there? Ain't nobody say nothing about that. Steve Kerr's son. Where does he work now?
Yeah, right. Nepotism is one thing.
But I think this is. I personally think that's a great point. Because
I mean,
we look at this. We don't tend to have an issue when nepotism flows from the management down. People tend to have an issue when it flows from the players up. It's the fruit of the same poisonous tree, if you even want to call it a poisonous tree. It's like fruit of the same tree, I should say. Like, we know that guys that are friends or have relationships with a GM or with a coach get their foot in the door early. This guy's been with Kawhi since before San Diego State. He was a walk-on at San Diego State. He's Kawhi's guy. And from what I understand, correct me if I'm wrong, because you're closer to this than I am, he had reached something of a ceiling in San Antonio. There was a job he had applied for in San Antonio he didn't get. So, like,
the head video guy left in San Antonio, and they didn't interview him for the potential promotion.
So obviously for the Raptors, this is an effort to keep Kawhi Leonard. What you seem skeptical. What are you skeptical of, Jenna?
I don't love it.
What do you not love?
I don't love the fact that Kawhi Leonard has made it very clear that it's not where he wants to be. It's not where he wants to go.
Maybe my issue is also
with bringing him into the coaching staff. If you want to get him a job, maybe that's different. But when you bring him onto the coaching staff, I have a little bit.
Well, let's gather all the facts. The guy has done all the due diligence that everyone else in the NBA has done. All right. He was a college player. He was a good high school player. Was in college, graduated from college, went to the D League, earned his stripes on his way up. And I know this in talking to Kawhi's people. Kawhi didn't recommend this guy. This guy went out and got this job on his own. They had a position that was going to be able to. Kawhi didn't say, hey, man, you guys want to hire my guy and bring me up here? No. But also, he does have a relationship also with Danny Green. They did get two players in the trade, Kawhi Leonard and Danny Green. So he does have intel and a relationship. But I do know this for 100% fact. Kawhi did not represent him. Kawhi did not present a package to Toronto. Toronto sought this guy out and decided to hire him because they thought that he was going to be an asset to the organization.
And one of the reasons he's an asset, even with Kawhi not advocating for him, is because they are trying to present their best face possible to get Kawhi Leonard to stay. But I don't know why anyone would have an issue with that. The most important person for the Toronto Raptors is Kawhi Leonard until he's no longer a Raptor. If they wanted to name Kawhi's uncle president of basketball operations, that's their prerogative. Like, the only thing that matters to the Raptors is keeping him. I think they have a very slim chance of keeping him. Does just like we talked about, I'm just surprised by your opinion on this. We talked about Bruce Bowen. He gets fired by the Clippers. Why? Because they thought having him on the broadcast hurt their chances of getting Kawhi Leonard. Now, Kawhi didn't call them and say, fire Bruce Bowen or I'm not taking a meeting. They just said, what's his value to us? How does he hurt us in our acquisition of Kawhi Leonard? They did the math. It doesn't help us, might hurt us, let's get rid of him. The Raptors did the math saying, we have this position open, this guy is not incompetent, this guy can do it, and it helps us get Kawhi Leonard. Like, let me tell you right now, Chris's stepson, pardon me, I apologize, interned for us this summer. Yeah. Okay? If Chris was potentially going to leave the show in a few months, I would go to Ked and say, hire Austin. Create a position, figure it out. Like, that's what you do for talented people that can help your organization. I just think this is done in sports all the time. I got no problem with it whatsoever.
It's done in all businesses all the time. It's not just sports. It's done everywhere all the time. And sometimes to the detriment of the company, you would argue. But, I understand your point.
Yeah, we had an open audition for this show.
All right?
Nick and I were going to be on this show. All right? I saw all the names of the people in the open audition. All right? I took it liberty upon myself in front of all of our bosses. I wrote one name down and put it in the left-hand corner.
This is a true story.
Is that what not happened, Nick?
That's what happened.
One hand, I said,
In defense, I only had two names, Jenna, but he had the one. Yeah. I mean, if we're gonna just tell everyone the true stories. I had two names. Chris said, well, one of your names is my only name, so this is the name we're going with.
Right.
Yeah.
Ultimately, that won out. Now, if that happened to be the favor for Chris Carter or everything, so be it. Because it's good when it works out for us.
Yes.
All right? And most of the time, things like this, they do work out for you. But this is what makes the world go round. It's not what you know. It's who you know sometimes.
It's true.
Absolutely. There you go. Are you going to frame that?
I'm going to add a little heart right there and then give that one back, too. Moving on to the Oakland Raiders.
It was only two. I know you think it was a longer list.
I want to know who that other name was. New head coach John Gruden is pretty happy with his starting quarterback, Derek Carr. Gruden says, quote, there's no question that he's got more talent than anybody I've ever coached. Granted, Gruden hasn't coached a ton of great quarterbacks, but still. All right, CeCe, how good do Carr and this Raiders offense have to be to win the AFC West?
I'm glad John Gruden did repeat this. because when Coach decided to leave the booth, I knew this, but I was wondering if he was going to say it.
You knew it was true, or you knew he believed it, or both?
Both.
Okay.
Like, Carr has that type of arm talent. And people really, their memories aren't as good as they think they are. So people think John Gruden, they think offense, scoring, they think that. But look at his record. Look how many points they score a game. Look at the offensive productivity or the lack of it outside of that amazing 2000 in one season that he had with the Oakland Raiders with my boy Rich Gannon. It was the MVP of the league. They came together, Rich and him, yeah, and created fireworks there with Jerry Rice and Tim Brown. Besides that, not explosive offenses, not offenses leading the NFL in scoring. So John has struggled with quarterback. The reason why we thought the Raiders matchup was because he finally had a young quarterback who he can groom. So if Derek Carr does not make that next jump, don't look at Carr. Look to that coach right there, because he is the most talented. He's the most talented thrower of the football that Gruden has had. It should be a coach's dream that now, because the only reason why he came back into the league was, I got a quarterback. Because no one would come back into this league without a quarterback.
When you had as good of a job as he had. And
yes,
people can say, oh, he's making $10 million a year for 10 years. Okay, but if you want to work out the per hour wage, he was making a lot more doing the broadcasting. He's making $6 million a year doing that Monday Night Football job versus $10 million a year, and the workload's about 20x what it was doing the broadcasting job. So he had to come.
And no one at that network was ever thinking he could be replaced. It wasn't like, oh, you know, they watched the game and be like, you know something, I think we can do better. Every time he coached the Raiders, people are going to be critiquing him and think they can do better as a coach.
It was one of the reasons he was able to get the 10-year commitment from Oakland. I'm sure his agent represented to them, man, he's got the greatest job security in the world with his current job. Super high paid, super high profile, great job security. People, you guys know, I'm not as high on Derek Carr as Chris is, but I still think what John Gruden's saying is correct. That, I mean, just look, if you look at the resume of coaches, of quarterbacks Gruden has coached, aside from the Rich Gannon MVP year, and that was, I watched Rich Gannon play for my Kansas City Chiefs. I was upset when the Chiefs ended up choosing Steve Bono over, or Elvis Gerback over Rich Gannon. They let him move on. He goes to the Raiders, wins an MVP. Gruden does get some of that credit, by the way. Mm-hmm. Like, he made that work.
Yeah, that was Rich's best season of his career.
No question. And it was, and it's an outlier year in NFL history. A guy that late in their career turning into that level of player. We don't have examples of that. But in Tampa, he never made it work quarterback-wise. Like, and you can blame that on talent, but part of Coach Mangini would tell you, coaching job is to get the most out of their talent. The reason we look at, oddly enough, John Gruden as a great quarterback's coach is because of the broadcasting, is because of that quarterback camp show he did on ESPN. And I'm not saying he's not going to be good with Derek Carr, but I don't know that, because we saw him sit in a room with Johnny Manziel and say, spider 2, why banana? Can you tell me what this is? Can you diagnose this? Throw this football with no laces. Let me see if you can do this. He's very energetic and he's captivating. I get all of that. But that doesn't mean, I mean, I can be energetic and captivating. I can't coach no damn quarterback. Like, so it doesn't mean that he is necessarily a great quarterback's coach. We look at him like that because we've only seen him on television for a decade talking to quarterbacks and on the Monday Night Football booth talking about quarterbacks. And you're on television in that position. You get an air of authority about you, whether it is your history or not. So do you think one of the reasons, because you alluded to this in the last segment, he said, was him saying this a way to also put a shine on the level of success he did have at his other stops? Kind of reminding people, my quarterbacks weren't that great. We won a Super Bowl.
I mean, he didn't have to say it. I mean, because it is a shot at every other guy, because typically he's always saying good thing about the guys. Gannon, Brad Johnson, he's always saying good things about them. Brett Favre, when he was a quarterback coach there in Green Bay. But this one, he was like, this guy, because he was talking about as a head coach.
Right.
He wasn't talking about when he was an assistant and everything. So he didn't have to say it. So for me, as a teacher, this is what I'm concerned about with Coach Gruden. It's not how much football I know. It's how much football I can teach to the staff or teach to the audience. John Gruden, he needs to know that, because John Gruden has been, to me, consumed with letting us know how much football he knows. That's not that important. It's how much football can Carr know? How much can he teach Carr? And how much better does Carr apply that into the games and it becomes where we can see the results is that he reaches his potential as a quarterback?
I think that's a great point. And I was tongue-in-cheek when I say I can be captivating. Like, I'm not trying to act as if I know 10% of the football John Gruden knows spending his whole life in the league. But it is about that. What you're discussing right there, it's one of the reasons why sometimes great players, and I know this doesn't apply to Gruden, aren't the best coaches. Because sometimes guys
can't. No, it's impossible. It's impossible for what God gave them for them to be able to teach it. But a teacher has a God-given gift to not only to be able to learn and comprehend, but also a God-given ability to be able to voice that and teach other people.
There's an amazing story. I'm not going to say the Hall of Famer at play here, but one of the greatest football players ever doing television, and someone sitting there says they're in a 3-4 front, which is a pretty basic football term. Three linemen, four linebackers. And during the break, this guy, one of the greatest players ever, says to the other player, what are you talking about, 3-4 front? He couldn't teach the game. He just knew how to play the game. He knew how to be great at the game. And so sometimes we assign things. Again, I'm not saying Gruden's not going to do it, but I think we get ahead of ourselves if we act like we're certain he is.
Even I knew a 3-4 front. Coming up, is Teddy Bridgewater. I got really excited under the table with my fist bump. Trade it. That's next on First Things First. Welcome back to First Things First. Former head coach Eric Mangini's back with us. And a handshake. What's up, yeah. C?
Nothing. Just ready.
Just laughing.
Ready.
We always have a good time.
In a good
mood. Coaches out here.
Yeah. The Jets have themselves a surplus at the quarterback position. A sentence no human has ever really said before. While Sam Darnold is trending to become the week 1 starter, teams are beginning to inquire about Teddy Bridgewater. According to reports, at least 2 teams have expressed interest in the former Vikings quarterback. Coach, which team would be the best fit for Bridgewater?
Yeah, I just wonder how much real interest is being expressed about Teddy Bridgewater. And a lot of times these things can be reported, but it might be someone calling up and they're having a conversation about something totally different. And then the guy says, hey, what are you guys going to do with Bridgewater? And then if you're the Jets, you say, oh, teams have expressed interest because they're trying to get teams to actually be interested. So I don't even know if there's much truth to this. And even with the idea of trading for Bridgewater, he's on a 1-year deal. And he's a 1-year, $6 million deal. He's got another $9.5 million in incentives. He hasn't played any meaningful games in 2 years. And he's played in the back end of preseason games. What are you possibly going to give up for him at this point? Unless something absolutely devastating happens to your starting quarterback and you need to break glass.
Let's look at it from this angle. If there is a quarterback injury, a la what we saw Sam Bradford, whatever it is Teddy Bridgewater the first guy you'd call about league-wide? Like, who would be if a team all of a sudden, oh, my God, our quarterback's out. We think we can win right now. We're not in a rebuild. We need a quarterback. Who's the first name on your guys' board? I know all these teams have boards about, you know, break glass. Is Teddy Bridgewater is my first name. Maybe Teddy, then Jacoby, and I'm not sure who's third on the list.
Yeah, I haven't gone through the entire list of backup quarterbacks, and I don't have a board in my hotel room. but he would definitely be a candidate that you'd look at. But where does he compare to RG3 at this point? Where you don't know, both guys are guys that had significant success. RG3 had significant success.
Mm-hmm.
RG3 comes at a much lower price tag.
Yeah, RG3's looked good in the preseason.
He's looked good in the preseason in 3 games. So you just, I'm not saying that's the answer.
That was a good name.
But it's hard for me to get behind the trade a bunch of stuff for Teddy Bridgewater when he's got the contract that he has. It's really unproven over the last 2 years.
He hadn't played.
He had a level of success in Minnesota, but he threw 28 touchdowns to 22 picks, and his maximum was 14 touchdowns in 1 season. I think you just need to slow this train down a little bit.
I think that last point you made is coloring fairly a lot of your opinion on this, which is if we time machine back to going into the 2016 season and Teddy's never been hurt, it seems like you weren't as high on Teddy then as maybe I was. Like that Teddy, after year 2, pre-injury, that you didn't look at him as a guy, okay, that's a franchise quarterback in this league.
Well, when you look at Minnesota, there's a lot of guys that went to Minnesota that played better than anybody thought they'd play. Mm-hmm. And is Teddy a function of being in the right system, or is Teddy a function of being a guy that's an emerging talent that can eventually lead a team full-time?
I think you said a couple things very important. I think that I'm pretty certain to this, that a lot of that Teddy Bridgewater interest is generated by the Jets, okay? Because you have not seen a player that would come back from an injury like Teddy has come back from and have the contract. It's a soft contract. They can get out of it. That would generate that type of interest unless there was something else. There hadn't been enough preseason games. There hadn't been enough snaps for someone to say, man, I can avoid with this guy who had a horrific knee injury 2 seasons ago. No. So I'm like you. Yes, we can talk about Teddy, but as the season goes on, unless someone is significantly injured, Teddy Bridgewater is more of an asset on the Jets roster and continuing to do, because I believe that the Jets are going to need him this year, all right? So we can't forget where Teddy came from. Like, we don't have a whole bunch of positive film on him. So, I mean, what are they going to trade now for him, a sixth-round pick, fifth-round pick?
The Jets definitely wouldn't trade him for that. I agree he has more value on the roster.
Why wouldn't they? Well, what do you think they're going to get for him? Hey, I got this guy in a one-year contract, so give me a two? Like, what are you going to trade? What do you think you're going to get for him?
Well, listen, there's a gap between a second-round pick, which I think is a little high, and a sixth-round pick, which is too low. I think the Jets would trade him for a third. And if I'm
That's nice. Yeah, well, I'd trade him for a third, too.
But you also right now, tell me if I'm wrong. And, again, we can have different opinions on a player. You also think right now if Sam Darnold doesn't start for the Jets, which we all believe he will, but if he doesn't, you wouldn't start Teddy. You'd start McCown, correct?
Well, I think that McCown will give you a certain level of performance, and there is a lot more certainty there. Teddy is still coming back from a very significant injury, and he's got limited exposure. So if your goal is to go into the season with a relative level of anticipation of what you can get, then, yeah, you go with McCown. Bridgewater is more of a lottery ticket at this point.
Nick, do you think Teddy Bridgewater could be a starter on another team right now?
Of course. Yes,
who would he start
absolutely
for right now?
Right. Well, if I'm not worried about I think Teddy Bridgewater's as good, if not better, than Ryan Tannehill. Now, I understand the Dolphins this year, they contractually, but if you're talking about just pure talent, guys across the league, then
I think Tannehill's better.
You think Tannehill's better than him?
I really do.
I think he's better than Blake Bortles. And that team, now that's a mistake I think they made this offseason in deciding to extend Blake Bortles. I understand they can't go backwards.
But
in
you're
time
doing like that based off of the three or the two games that you've seen in preseason so
no,
far?
No, I'm doing it.
Or back to the 2 years of Scotty did 2 years ago on him.
I think that what the player I saw, not only coming out of Louisville, but the player that I saw in Minnesota, when Adam Thielen wasn't the guy he is now, when Stephon Diggs is not that guy right now, a guy that I saw lead a Minnesota Vikings team offensively to the playoffs. And I was a defensive-oriented team, and Zimmer did a great job. Saw him in a playoff game lead them on a game-winning drive until Blair Walsh misses a 27-yard field goal. In year two, that's a guy I say, okay, he's going to be a...
But people don't know Minnesota. Minnesota had a top-10 defense,
yeah,
trending on top 5. They also had Adrian Peterson.
Absolutely.
Yeah, he was pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, they had Adrian Peterson.
And you had to commit quite a bit to deal with Adrian Peterson.
No doubt. But, I mean, listen, maybe I'm a man on an island here. I thought that it was a savvy move by Minnesota to trade back into the first round to get Teddy Bridgewater. I thought he's a guy that can be, I don't know, somewhere in that 15th to 10th best quarterback in the league range. He was trending well. He was trending, getting better from year one to year two. I understand the raw touchdown numbers are low, but we got to be fair. If we're going to say one of the reasons they were successful is because of Adrian Peterson, one of the reasons he doesn't have as many touchdown passes is because Adrian Peterson's going to get the goal line in the short yard.
But offensively, though, they were challenged in those years.
Absolutely.
They were challenged in those years.
And let's put aside the touchdown numbers. The interception numbers are a concern for me. When you're almost a 50-50 guy of touchdowns and interceptions, that's always a concern because now you start questioning overall decision making.
See, we can look at the same thing and disagree. I look at his last year in Minnesota and I say the completion percentage right where I want it, 65. The yards per attempt, right about a little low, but 7.5 is fine. Like 7.3 is fine. It's not elite, but it's anything above 7 is fine. The quarterback rating, 89 for a young player, okay. The interceptions, I'll take 9 picks on a year. The only reason it doesn't look good is because the 14 touchdowns. Like 9 picks is not high, it's only high in relation to the
touchdowns.
Remember
the year before was 14 touchdowns too and 12 picks.
Absolutely.
So I guess we could say, yeah, he improved by 3 less interceptions.
Okay.
So throw a party.
All right.
So you, just so we're clear, you don't think he can start in the league?
No, no. Don't take my comments of I'm not going to trade
right now,
away a third
round
draft pick.
Right now, as the league is formed, there is not a job that they think they upgraded the quarterback if they take Teddy. Those two examples, we disagree with you.
And I think the Jets could keep all three of those guys.
Yes.
And it would still cost them $16 million less than Jimmy Garoppolo is getting paid in San Francisco.
Sure.
Let's see what happens.
Glad we all agreed on that one. Coach, stick around. Coming up, should we be encouraged or discouraged by Lamar Jackson's performance last night? That is next on First Things First. Right, back to last night's football game. The theme in this one, subpar quarterback play, and we don't discriminate. Subpar all around. Luck was shaky. Lamar was shaky. 7 for 15, 49 yards and a touchdown. Flacco was a little better, but let's focus on Lamar here. You know what we have, don't you? We got a conversation about the quarterbacks in Baltimore. Coach, what were your impressions of Lamar last night?
Well, I think the idea if the idea was to draft him to put pressure on Joe Flacco, I don't think Joe Flacco's worried. I think that part, it may have happened for about a few weeks, but he can't be worried now after watching him play. And it's not surprising. He's a young guy who's got a ton to learn about reading coverages and throwing from the pocket. You know, it is a little tough during the broadcast to hear how athletic he is every 5 seconds. And every time he runs with the ball, it's like that's what he can do in the NFL. Yeah, he can. Yeah, we got that, you know. But now we've got to develop the whole player and see some more progress.
Let me ask you something about that, because I understand that if he gets pressed into action in the regular season, you do anything you can to win a football game. So whatever you got to do, if you got to install a special package for him, if Flacco gets hurt and he's got to play, then whatever you need to do. In the preseason, would you, if you were trying to develop Lamar Jackson, remove the zone read stuff, remove some of those things, and try to remove some of the things that he's going to be most comfortable with to try to get him more live action reps where he will have to simulate real NFL football, or what you would call real NFL football, of dropping back, reading the coverages, playing from the pocket?
Well, I would imagine, and especially with Greg Roman being there, that they've developed a package that you will see the first week of the season, and you'll see throughout the course of the season. Now, they're not going to show any of that, and they're not really going to talk about that, but they're working on that on a consistent basis in Baltimore. Yeah, these games are a great opportunity for him to develop the skill set outside of what we know he can already do. And every time he runs, it's exciting, I get that, but you really would like him to be able to make those decisions in the pocket just to keep working on something that he needs to work on.
I don't think people – he used a lot of athleticism running to the sideline last night, in last night's game for me, because he used his speed, whatever it is, 4-4, whatever it is, but it was to get out of bounds. It wasn't to advance the sticks. You didn't see him be able to utilize it in the type of way that they're going to have to do during the regular season. If we do what you said as far as try to do the things that he's going to struggle, by the regular season, he won't have no confidence. Okay. The reason why you do the things that he's familiar with, so he gets real live looks at the read option, like how fast was that guy? Was that guy closing? Can I take this and run with it? So it's going to have him more prepared, because the package, as Coach talked about, that they're going to have ready for Lamar for week number one, it will be off of things like that. Now, who will be on the field? Will they have two quarterbacks on the field? All those things. They will have the element of surprise in week number one, but you got to give this kid some things that he can do well. Brian Billick, when we got Randy Moss, we had worked out all offseason in Florida. When we got to Minnesota, he said, come to my office. I was like, for what? He was like, come to my office. He was like, man, give me three things this kid can do. I said, man, a stop, a slant, and a takeoff. We should have them in the first day so we can develop some confidence in them, and then we can try to explore it. Now, Randy could do other things then, but you have to make these players successful, and as successful as you can make them, the earlier, the better, before they lose their confidence. We see kids come from college every year, and what do they lose? Not ability. Not their love for football, but when they lose their confidence, it's hard to learn. It's hard to stick with it and keep progressing as a player.
You've now seen three preseason games from Lamar. Is he getting better? Is he getting more comfortable? Can you see more positives at the end of three games, Coach?
Well, what I have really liked is there's not a lot of pre-snap errors. You don't see the ball on the ground where they're fumbling snaps. You don't see a lot of guys jumping off sides where the cadence isn't quite right. He looks pretty poised and comfortable in the role that he's been asked to play. Sometimes those guys go in and they look over-caffeinated. Everything is so sped up because they're nervous, they're anxious. So I like that aspect of what I've seen from him. In terms of his overall development, we can't expect him to make gigantic jumps every week. So as long as he's making incremental jumps, you're happy as a coach.
He started off yesterday's game terribly. It was 0-for-4, but it's even worse than the 0-for-4 sounds like. It was 3-3 and outs. He was a big part of it. He said after the game he thought one of the reasons he started off with his throws being off, I don't know if this is an excuse or an explanation, but he said, I didn't do a good job when Flacco was in the game. He's like, I wasn't warming up on the sideline. I learned now that he didn't have a lot of experience of not being a starter and realizing, got to keep my arm loose. C makes the point that Brady does that during the game. Like, once the defense on the field, he's then getting his arm loose, getting ready. So he said he's going to learn from that. After that start, I thought he was fine, not great, but had the one great moment. And it was the designed rollout to the right where it's a 3rd and 2. It looked to me like he could have run for a first down there. It would have been to the sideline. It looked to me right there, oh, I thought he was going to run. And instead, he finds a guy that I think was his 2nd or 3rd read. Tight window. It's a good catch, but it's also a very good throw. That was the first moment you're like, oh, so that's interesting. Like the athleticism to do the designed rollout, do it well, keeps his eyes upfield and fits it into a small window. Not just because it was a touchdown pass, but because of everything that went into that. That was clearly his best moment of the night.
Yeah, and going back to Chris's point, this is something that he's used to doing. Here's a design move the pocket play,
yes,
which plays to his strength of being able to get the edge on guys. It allows receivers to come into his vision. And I imagine if he plays a substantial amount, you're going to get a lot of this. And look, there's real value in having those plays in your system, and it puts pressure on defenses. But in the traditional sense, that's not one of your more traditional plays.
And I just wish that we stay on. If playing quarterback in the NFL is hard as it is, how the heck do we expect to look at 2 or 3 games and think these guys are going to have it figured out? They are going to struggle. We just have to get used to it. So the struggle should be like norm. It's been like, wow, Lamar didn't look good. He's not supposed to look good. It's called professional football. It's the biggest challenge that he's ever had in his athletic career. He is at the task. And he's going to have a lot of bad days. But he is the future of the Baltimore Ravens based on what Ozzie Newsome and the others there in the front office and how they feel.
Man, we watched Andrew Luck. He had bad days, too. With all these guys, this is still the practice phase, and they haven't been playing together for very long. And these are young guys. And for us to think they're going to be stars right off the bat, it's just not realistic.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.